ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm on a flight to a town called Ayodhya. It's about an hour from Delhi, and something happened that I've never experienced before.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome on board flight 6E.
Most of the passengers were holy men and pilgrims wearing saffron robes. There were a few politicians and journalists on board as well, and you could feel the excitement. As we're taking off, the holy men start chanting. They're saying glory to Lord Ram, and they are pumped because we're heading to a historic moment, one that Narendra Modi's been working towards for years, and an event the whole country is watching. Modi's opening a Hindu temple in Ayodhya, which is where some in the religion believe the important god Ram was born. For the last 11 days, Modi's just eaten some fruit and coconut water. He says he's slept on the floor every night in preparation for the opening. He's visited all these places where Ram is believed to have been. And then he arrives to Ayodhya in a helicopter, and the Hindu pilgrims around me go crazy. People here are invigorated. Do not ask me how we came here, one woman tells me. We travelled here without sleeping for two nights. Lord Ram called us, so we came. Modi built this temple for all of us. Modi finally comes out. His face is on big screens all over Ayodhya, in markets and parks across India. The opening is even being live-streamed at Times Square. At the temple, Bollywood stars, politicians and religious leaders watch him, and Modi makes this powerful speech. It's so evocative. The entire country is emotional and overwhelmed to be a part of history and witness this long-awaited historic moment, he says. Since the groundbreaking ceremony of the Ram Temple, enthusiasm and excitement has been growing daily across the country, he says. Watching the construction, a new sense of confidence was being born among the citizens. But by opening this temple, Narendra Modi has just closed one of the most divisive chapters in India's history, because this temple has been built where a Muslim mosque once stood. It was destroyed by Hindu right-wing mobs in the 90s with their bare hands. And it's all based on a legend that Modi has made central to his prime ministership. I've come to Ayodhya because this one temple is such a big part of Narendra Modi's story. It's been talked about for decades. But I want to know why, and why it's led to deaths, legal battles, and so much division. I'm Avani Dias, and I'm the ABC's South Asia correspondent. I've been travelling around India trying to get to the bottom of who Narendra Modi really is, and the myths that surround the man. This is Looking for Modi. On this episode, Modi's holy politics. After Modi spent his years finding himself in the Himalayas, he finally gave his all to politics and worked his way up through the right-wing Hindu nationalist organisation, the RSS. He became the chief organiser, in charge of coordinating grassroots campaigns. He was recognised for doing a great job, and by 1985, he was asked to do the same thing for its political arm, the Bharatiya Janata Party, or the BJP. Modi would do that through Yathra, which are processions where campaigners walk and drive through towns to spread a political message and get support. It's a big thing in India.
The BJP was eventually looking for an issue to try and get some momentum because they were at that point a reasonably small party in the country.
That's Pramith Pal Chaudhary. He was the foreign editor for one of India's biggest papers, the Hindustan Times. Now he's a consultant for a political group, Eurasia. The BJP is powerful now, but at the start of the 90s, the party was kind of obscure and looking for an issue to get traction. So, with the help of Narendra Modi, the party organised a yatra about this mosque in Ayodhya, in northern India, called the Babri Masjid.
There was a small mosque. This was really in the back alleys of Ayodhya. It was a really small, nondescript mosque. And while there was effectively almost a legend that this was the site on which a temple dedicated to Ram, or the baby Ram, had been built, there wasn't very much evidence of this. When the Rath Yatra under Advani and the BJP began to get some traction, I remember our newspaper sent some journalists, and basically they said, well, this is deeply buried in the middle of nowhere, in the back alleys of Ayodhya. So we don't see why anybody's even getting excited about this.
It's believed the Babri Masjid was built in the 1520s by a commander working for Babur, an emperor part of the Mughals, a Muslim Central Asian empire in South Asia. The mosque was built at the top of a hill in Ayodhya, and Hindu nationalist groups like the RSS and the BJP said a temple dedicated to Ram was destroyed by Babur to build it. So it was clearly a contested site, but Pramath says it was an odd mosque to focus on.
There are obviously many other temples which were destroyed and on which mosques were built. So that was very common in the medieval period. But like a lot of the others, like the Krishnarumi temple or the Kashi Vishwanath temple, there was no doubt that the mosque had been built on a demolished temple. And in some cases, the remains of the temple were still just there. This one is a really minor one in the middle of nowhere. And so it was unusual or interesting that it picked up so much traction over time.
In 1990, Narendra Modi, who is 40 years old at this point, helped his mentor and the president of the party, L.K. Advani, organise this procession to Ayodhya. It started in Gujarat, Modi's hometown. The aim was to build passion among India's Hindu majority and for the BJP to get support ahead of a national election. Modi stopped travelling with the yatra about halfway by the time it got to Mumbai. It seems like he didn't think it would become as big of a thing as it did. And he went back to Gujarat to keep building his political base. But crowds of Hindu right-wing activists kept going, walking 10,000 kilometres across the country, holding rallies in villages and towns as they went. It became one of India's biggest mass movements.
The BJP was able to build on an existing narrative, which had really not come together, but able to put a narrative together, quote, secularism in India had become biased against the Hindu majority. That perception actually began to hold. And that narrative, which has now become enormous and very powerful, is a secular state of India had become effectively a state that was opposed to the Hindu majority.
Even the BJP was surprised at how much it was resonating with people.
They come from all over India, one thing in their mind, to build a Hindu temple to their god Ram. Ayodhya is a catalyst which has the potential to set India ablaze with sectarian violence.
Mobs of religious volunteers and members of far-right groups eventually got to Ayodhya. 150,000 were apparently jailed along the way. 20 were killed. In Ayodhya, we met Nemaram Prajapathy, who says he was in the groups that travelled to the city. He's riding his bike around Ayodhya. It's got photos of Modi all over it and marigold flowers and bells. I'm not sure how he manages to ride it, to be honest. He uses a shell to blow a horn as pilgrims around him chant. Som, my producer, is with me. Som, Nemaram was an interesting guy. What did he say about when the procession of people came to Ayodhya?
Nemaram said that thousands of years passed and no one actually did anything. He said that when Hindu volunteers, referred as Kar Sevak, came to Ayodhya to demolish the disputed structure, he went with them.
The BJP's procession to the temple worked. There were tens of thousands of people who got to Ayodhya, and it was a huge political win for the BJP too. In the 1991 elections, the BJP became the second largest party for the first time. It finally went from being an obscure party to one with power.
In their hundreds of thousands, Hindu zealots had answered the call, gathering at Ayodhya for what was supposed to be a peaceful ceremony to build a Hindu temple beside an ancient Muslim shrine.
On the 6th of December 1992, the mobs were revved up. BJP leaders made speeches like LK Advani, Modi's mentor. At about 11 in the morning, the crowd started chanting, "We will build a temple here."
Hindu holy men and their political leaders appeared to have the situation around the fortified mosque under control.
The mosque was cordoned off, but one man got past it and climbed onto the Babri Masjid and put up a saffron flag. And the mobs saw this as their sign to storm the mosque.
There are hundreds of Hindus just climbing over the barbed wire fence. The saffron flag of Hinduism is raised.
Everyone started pushing each other to get to the front, and you could see the crowds getting out of control. They were breaking down the barricades around the Babri Masjid and climbing over them.
And the police, well, I just can't see the police now. They're standing inside and they don't appear to be doing anything.
People climbed on top of the three domes of the mosque and the police looked helpless. The mobs were using axes, hammers, and their bare hands to start tearing the 16th century building down while chanting.
An event which may have communal implications across the length and breadth of India.
People were excited. They were cheering and clapping as each part of the building diminished. They were waving flags or with their arms up in the air. The 20,000 police were outnumbered and most of them left.
For the Hindu extremists, the event marked the success of a campaign lasting more than 40 years to reclaim what they say is the birthplace of their god Ram.
By about 5 o'clock that evening, it was all over. One report said what remained of the mosque was a red cloud of dust.
No, I think, I mean, everybody was shocked, including even people within my newspaper who are supporters of the BJP were shocked because they had never expected this to actually happen.
While the demolition was happening, Narendra Modi was back in Gujarat doing his own thing. He was setting up a high school in Ahmedabad dedicated to an RSS founder.
Pretty certain he was, yes, one of the people who was involved in the yatra, but he was not a major player. If you wish, even well before Modi, it was in the manifesto.
Back in Ayodhya, Muslims were outraged by the demolition. Hindus and Muslims started clashing on the streets. Homes, shops, temples and mosques were burned and looted. The fighting spread all over the country, even as far as Kolkata on the other side of India, where Pramath was working as a reporter.
And I remember that day, most of my time was actually spent sitting we had a sort of war room in the newspaper office, trying to map the riots breaking out in Calcutta. So people are actually just ringing in, because often people rang up the newspaper before they told the police and asked for help. So we actually had this giant map and were sitting there trying to figure out where the riots are breaking out and who was attacking who, because it was not just Muslims attacking Hindus, but it was obviously there were attacks in both directions. And then the army issued shoot-on-sight orders, imposed a curfew. At the end of the day, when night came and we were closing down the addition, we couldn't go back home because the streets of curfew was on.
And can you explain, for someone who might not get it, Kolkata is on the other side of the country. So how did sentiment build so much across the entire country that there were riots everywhere after the demolition?
Because I think there was a huge shock for the Muslim community of a mosque actually being demolished on the basis of religion. While riots have sectarian violence was not unusual in India at that point, the sheer scale of what happened was, I think, the biggest surprise or shock about that. I, at least at that point, hadn't seen violence on that level.
Apni ghar ki taraf is taraf.
While I'm in Ayodhya, I meet Abdulaziz. He's a Muslim man whose family has lived in the town for generations. When the demolition happened and the riots broke out, he had just gotten married.
Agjani maar kaat lagaye apna. Uske baad 7 tarikh ko jo kuch hua 7 tarikh ko is mohalle mein hua.
Abdul told us that the day after the mosque was taken down, the mobs also got into his part of town.
Yes, it's correct. He said that they demolished the mosque near his house, which is a small mosque different from the Babri Mosque. He said mobs were carrying spears, ropes and swords in their hand, and police just stood there and did nothing.
Abdul says his father was killed in front of him.
Abdul told us that he tried to save his father, but there were hundreds of people in the mob, so he had to run away.
And he told us that he felt helpless.
That's correct. He said that it was like keeping your hand on your heart and you can't do anything about it.
More than 2,000 people died in these riots. Most of them were Muslims. Many BJP leaders were arrested over the demolition of the mosque as well.
That was seen by the BJP at the time as a disaster because, as you know, it resulted in, one, riots across the country, the BJP being denounced across the political spectrum. But curiously enough, over time, it actually began to work in their favour.
Whether or not the BJP, RSS and other Hindu right groups intended to destroy the mosque has been debated through the courts and in a lot of inquiries. The BJP has constantly said the demolition was spontaneous, that the leaders there did not incite the violence. This is party president LK Advani speaking in 2011. He led the procession to the mosque.
I describe that as the saddest day of my life.
But while you were sitting there, did you feel that this is a terrible mistake, the demolition?
Yes, it's a terrible mistake, no doubt about it.
A 2009 report found BJP leaders were responsible for the demolition, but a special court in 2020 cleared the senior figures, including LK Advani. Some say Modi would regret not being part of such a pivotal moment for the BJP, the yatra that made it to Ayodhya. Others say he was more calculated, that he deliberately chose not to be linked with the more extreme ends of the Hindu nationalist movement at that early stage of his political career. But it would have taken a lot of foresight to predict how this would all go at that point. Either way, he avoided the years of legal trouble his BJP colleagues had to deal with and has been able to use the building of the Hindu temple at Ayodhya as a powerful political tool. When Narendra Modi became the chief minister of the state of Gujarat, he spoke constantly about the temple legend. In this really old recording, he says Ram Temple should be built at the birthplace of Lord Ram. No power in the world can stop construction of the Ram Temple. Since the demolition of the mosque, the site was rubble and Narendra Modi made building a temple there an election promise. In 2019, after years of legal battles over which religion should get the land where the Babri Masjid once stood, India's highest court found the demolition of the mosque was against the rule of law, but gave the site to Hindus. The court offered land 25 kilometres down the road to Muslims to build a new mosque, which hasn't started construction. So finally, on January 22nd, 2024, Narendra Modi opened the first part of the temple. And it was a spectacle. Air Force helicopters scattered rose petals across the temple. Modi lay flat on his face in prayer and finally broke his 11-day fast with some sweet milk given to him by a religious leader in the temple. He started his speech by saying the god Ram had arrived.
Aaj hamare Ram aa gaye.
So when Modi started his speech, he said that Lord Ram had arrived.
Yes, he said January 22 wasn't just a date, but a start of a new era. And the construction of this temple has filled people with new energy.
Ram vivad nahi, राम समाधान है.
I also found it interesting how he then said the temple wasn't giving birth to fire. He never actually mentioned the mosque at all or the previous riots, but that was his way of saying that the violence is all in the past.
Yes, PM Modi said that Lord Rama is a solution, not a dispute. And it's not the Lord Rama doesn't just belong to him, but belongs to everyone.
And he was trying to appeal to all Indian voters by saying that. As the temple was opened, the Hindu pilgrims around us were so excited. Some of them started dancing, and people like Nimaram Prajapathi, who says he helped demolish the mosque, were worshipping Narendra Modi. Som, Nemaram said he vowed not to wear shoes until the temple was built in Ayodhya and that he's been riding his bike around India for this cause, that he's travelled 40,000 kilometres. What did he say about Narendra Modi, though?
He said PM Modi was a divine man that built the Ram temple and entire world is watching this event. He said the holy city of Ayodhya is actually a city of gold.
Off the main road where everyone was celebrating, in the back streets of Ayodhya, you could still see the new temple, but things felt different there. Muslim people were hiding, worried about what would happen if they went outside. One of those people was Abdul Aziz, whose dad was killed in the riots in 1992. Abdul said that he asked his family to leave because of the temple opening, but they didn't. Did he say they accepted the new temple, though?
Yes, he said they accept. And he also said that it wasn't a justice, but they are helpless.
The weird thing is, this temple hasn't finished being built yet. And some Hindu leaders around the world were criticizing Modi, saying you can't open a temple that's not fully constructed. But he chose that date because it was essentially the launch of his election campaign. In his speech, he said, this grand Ram temple will become a witness to the rise of a grand India, a developed India. This is India's time, and India is going to move forward.
He's made it a mass event. His speech at the temple, which I thought was masterful, was interesting because he made it almost as inclusive as he could possibly make it. He barely mentioned anything really religious. He invited Muslim, Parsis, Christians to come to the consecration.
Narendra Modi has turned this issue that once tore apart India into a legend that so many Indians want to be a part of.
I think Modi has played this on a number of levels. He's made it a mass project, right? They've held prayer meetings, they've taken the akshat, which is the rice that is used in the beginning of religious Hindu ceremonies, and taken them across households across the country, and made this into something that the public, large swaths of the public, now feel connected to in a remarkable way. And of course, you saw the popular response. It was phenomenal. And it's still going on. 6 a.m., thousands of people are going off to take the holy dip in the river and prayer, and it's still going on. Literally millions of pilgrims are now expected to go there every year. And it will become, in effect, I think what historians call an invented tradition. It will now become embedded in Indian society that this is the place to go for a marriage or and so on, for a temple that really had no historical basis.
But many in the Muslim minority, like Abdul Aziz, people who fought decades ago when the mosque was destroyed, are like, well, we have no choice but to accept this. And he says it's not just this situation in Ayodhya. Amnesty International has found Muslim homes, businesses, and places of worship have been unjustly targeted in states where Modi's party, the BJP, is in charge. Abdul told us, all is theirs and none is mine. The mosque demolition in Ayodhya would go on to trigger an event that nearly made Narendra Modi lose his entire career. That's on the next episode of Looking for Modi. This podcast is by me, Avani Dias, and produced by Madeline Jenner. Additional production by Yasmin Parry, research by Som Patidar, and audio production is by Anna John.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.